in our model, if you want to, you know, set yourself a challenge to do push-ups every week, a certain number, and say, okay, I'll put $100 on the table. If I don't do those push-ups, they go to charity. You can set that up in this model.
Hello and welcome to The Augmented Self, the podcast where we explore the intricate world of wearable technology and its incredible impact on health and wellness. I'm your host, Jean-Philippe Thiel, on this journey into the fascinating intersection of tech, health, and the human body. Each time we delve into thought-provoking discussions with industry professionals, innovators, and thought leaders in the wearable tech space. We'll explore cutting-edge advancements, AI application, examine the efficiency of metrics, and tackle the ever-important issue of data privacy. We're here not just to learn, but also to foster a community of tech enthusiasts, wellness advocates, and curious minds. So whether this is your first episode or you're a regular listener, we want to hear from you. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a comment on this episode. Your feedback shapes our conversation in this rapidly evolving field. Now let's dive into today's episode.
Right. Well, welcome to Dubai. What a week has it been?
A wet and wonderful week.
What a wet and wonderful week. Colin, thank you for agreeing to have this chat. I did want to get an opportunity to talk and explore a little bit more around what we're doing, and particularly for our audience, talk about the digital health network economy that we're wanting to prop up. Over to you. Maybe we start by introducing each other. Tell us a bit about yourself, Colin.
Sounds great. So I'm the managing director of a firm called Connect Partners. We're a venture incubation and advisory firm. So we work with various number of companies to help them with fundraising, go to market, really just kind of anything strategically that we can help with by giving them access to our network of family offices, corporate decision makers, and VC investors. Mm-hmm. We also build some of our own companies in our venture studio. And so, you know, one of the reasons I was so excited to get to speak today is because this topic of digital health and really network health kind of combined a lot of the things I'm really interested in, which is economics, technology, and healthcare. Right.
That's right.
From a personal perspective, I want to be healthy, but also I think if you're, you care about humankind and our neighbors, we want to uplift everybody. And I think that these are kind of the tools that we can use to do that. And I think that you might have a very interesting and unique way to look at it.
Well, I hope so. So for those who don't know me, a quick intro as well. I'm the founder of Symbionic Labs and the Symbionic Foundation. This is something that's been 8 years in my head, and we've been 2 years hard working on it. The background for me, I started my life in FMCG. I was in tech right after. I consider myself a little bit of a failed engineer somewhere in a funny way. My dad was working in a bank. I wanted to be an electronic engineer, and somewhere in those discussions, there was, that's not really a job. That could be a hobby. Why don't you learn business? And so I ended up following that, and I found the back door in tech with the mobile phone boom. And my last corporate role, I was GM marketing for Samsung. It almost feels like another life ago now. I've been working for myself for over 13 years. Passion for health is part of my own health journey, trying to biohack myself and trying to understand more about my biology and a few issues that I've got that I'm trying to solve. And discovery that I made in 2014, looking at movement and how we could use technology to track movement and help people exercise. I found the work of a German gentleman called Mr. Laban. And Laban was in the field of dance, so I'm not a dancer. But I found that field very fascinating because, by definition, very complex movement. The problem that Laban solved at the time in the 1900s is how we move the show that company Ballet Company A has done in this city to Ballet Company B. And, you know, if you're a musician, you know there's a music score. And Mr. Laban inventing a movement score. So basically he came up with a set of characters and symbols that you could combine to describe movement. I just saw this and I said, well, that makes it digital. Mm-hmm. So I just jumped on it and said, well, if I can actually use that mechanic to describe someone's movement, then we have the essence, DNA of that movement, and we can try to apply it and pass it on to someone else and teach someone else. And so I saw the opportunity to have a platform where you can help teach movement accurately. That was the beginning of a very long rabbit hole in which I'm now building.
Amazing. So tell me a little bit about Symbionic Labs and what you're trying to do with that inspiration in mind, right?
Right. So Symbionic Labs is the hardware and software arm. When I say hardware, normally people say hardware is hard. Why are you building hardware? There is a beauty in hardware that it enables fantastic software. And Apple is a living example of that. People forget all the other companies who tried to have a separation with hardware manufacturers and their software always end up having a complicated ecosystem with loads of bits that don't necessarily work across everyone. So that's our vision. When you come to Movement Capture, which is the core of our first product, it's really hard, and although there's amazing progress with Vision AI, it's really hard to do low-cost, efficient capture of your body movements in 3D, and also something that gives you a feedback loop. So we build haptic feedback on the body, so which means when we use our product to train and learn a complicated movement sequence, we have the ability to tap and buzz and vibrate the person to guide them through that routine they're trying to learn.
And is this specific to like skillful movement, like dance or athletes or maybe on the job for certain manual labor? Is this what you're talking about, or is it more general, like walking through the neighborhood?
No, it's really about posture perfect movement that you would want to learn in a dance or in martial arts or yoga or Pilates. And so our target audience is a mix of high performance athletes who is looking to do the extra a little bit that's going to improve the form, and a very good friend of mine who's high performance athlete coach really said to me recently, this is about getting this muscle memory. If you repeat, it becomes, and you do it right, it becomes an automatism. And that's what they're looking for, so that you don't have to think about the movement that you're trying to make. So that's probably a very niche segment, but very highly demanding segment, which we hope to satisfy so we can actually build the best product possible. The more mainstream could be simple as the 40 plus who's realized that this body's asset isn't going to last forever and they need to include more physical activity. And so they pick up yoga, they pick up martial arts, they pick up, fitness training, weights training, etc., to add more physical activity to their life. And in today's day and age, it's really hard to fit that in your program. I know about that as well. I've got a gym membership that I pay diligently, and I don't always attend it. So, this allows people to actually do hybrid training. You can show up on the Monday with your coach, do a session. He can give you homework. You can go home and continue to train.
Right. Yeah, you're reminding me to sit up straight now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, working out as a younger man in the gym, and you're with your teammates and your friends, and so you're pushing yourself, and you think you're doing so good, and then someone comes and corrects your posture just a little bit, and you realize, oh, wow, I'm actually not doing it correctly. Now I really feel those muscles being engaged. I really feel the difference, right? Mm-hmm. So I can see that being really valuable for those people that want to kind of elevate what it is that they're doing. How does that then kind of relate to promoting more general healthcare at a population level, right?
Yeah. So it's really just one component. Physical activity is not the only thing. Most of the people will tell you that the first effort is in the kitchen and portion control and calorie counting and all these things. Other people will say calorie don't matter. It's about the nutrients, et cetera, et cetera. There's loads of different school. One of the problems we face, actually five problems we face, if I want to be absolutely accurate. It's access to a professional. I just covered that and said how we could train hybrid and remotely. But the second one is education. It's about understanding. I mean, the internet is filled with information, right?
Yeah.
And understanding right from wrong, and which is the fad and which is, the third one is privacy. and having a private setting where you can actually feel comfortable. A lot of young mothers, women are not going to the gym because they just feel a bit shy. They don't want to be looked at, and they just want to feel comfortable training. So our solution addresses that as well, and we think that's a big target market. The fourth thing is about metrics. You know, what am I measuring? Mm. What actually makes sense? I mean, I've got all these wearables today, and I tend to use the phrase death by dashboard. I got all this information. I can see this is going up, this is going down. What does it mean to me? What do I change? What is the action plan? Mm. That does not get answered. Today, you give your data away to all these big corps. No offense, I've worked for many of them. What you get in return is a dashboard and no real indication of how that connects the dots. That's something we also aim to change, because with AI today, you can really build the full picture of your health and have that copilot health assistant that kind of guides you in making the right choices. That fuels into your motivation. The average motivation run is 90 days. That's how many how many days people spend on a health app on their phone, or how many days they spend serious at the gym, or whatever new decision you make on the 1st of January after these big end of the year meals, and you say, "Yeah, this year I'm going to be good." That's 90 days later. You last out.
Speaking to motivation. People talk a lot about accountability being very important if you want to be consistent, right? And that might mean having a workout buddy, maybe mm-hmm. getting a coach. How do you think about incentivizing consistency and accountability? And is there a social component where you can bring in mm-hmm. to make that a bit more human? And again, it's not just another dashboard, another app telling you it's time to work out.
Yeah,
which you just snooze and go to bed.
So you're touching a very important part, and this is why we when we thought hard about how to solve this problem, we thought, well, we're building this exercise app there that allows you to do remote training. Very quickly, you're going to want to add all your data from all your wearables, because I'm doing this physical training activity, but what about my heart rate? Am I in zone two? How do I bring in my nutrition, my sleep, all that in the picture? And then what else do I need? I mean, I want to be accountable. So how do I connect my friends? How do I find more classes? How do I find another coach for a different discipline? How do I, set myself a challenge, a quest, or whatever? We ended up thinking that we need an actual backend platform that has different modules. The social layer is very important. And so we are actually integrating that into our platform. So you can build an app and integrate a social network component. So you'd have a front end like you have on Facebook or mm-hmm. Twitter. Now, we're building this stack using Web3. So for people who are not familiar with Web3, that's the technology that uses blockchain. But basically what that gives you, if you want a simple mental model, is gives you ownership of the data and the posts that you make in a social content space. So you would have the front end, and the back end is managed and shared with everybody else. So that front end is integrated in your app. Whatever you post, you are actually connected to a much bigger universe. And that's where your coach, your trainers, your friends are. We can cross-post across all your channels, that whether it's the old classic Instagram or TikTok, etc. We can push that post across all the media, so you can get the reach that you need to get. But that also allows you to engage and be accountable. In our model, if you want to set yourself a challenge to do push-ups every week, a certain number, and say, okay, I'll put $100 on the table. If I don't do those push-ups, they go to charity. Mm. You can set that up in this model.
Yeah.
So you can get that accountability. Now, obviously, we want to build a system where those rewards can go a little bit further. It's the content creator, the coach, the trainer, has the ability to actually, as a toolbox, to add those points and create those environments where you can motivate people. They can say, you can throw in an extra lesson. They can say, here's the quest, here's a challenge. You need to complete those modules by this day, by this time. And this is how many points you unlock.
Yeah.
Those points can go towards getting more lessons. They can go towards a lot of other things in that ecosystem.
Yeah. So you can gamify the entire experience.
You can gamify.
Specifically for certain segments of people, right?
Yeah. I think in the future, you can easily have an app for children. You can easily have an app for seniors. And then you can go down. At the end of the day, you have almost as many apps as the use cases. So you can really, you know, target people correctly. The important part is the backend has to be uniform. And when I say uniform, I don't mean the central platform. So maybe we can talk about the old model of platform economies and what we're talking about.
Yeah, I wanted to ask
economies.
On that. I mean, one could argue, I mean, so you have several technologies coming together that really enable this. One being, you know, very low cost and efficient IoT devices, whether that's an Apple Watch or, you know, your own haptic feedback system. AI, which ingests that data and gives you those actionable insights and what to do. But then also Web3, right? And I think some people would say, well, do you really need Web3 to accomplish this? Maybe, you know, airlines have points and they incentivize you and you can go and spend them. That's not on Web3. So so what's the benefit of having that more open kind of protocol kind of an infrastructure versus just focusing on building the app with a vertical infrastructure, which you have complete control over, right?
Mm. Well, I think the word control is probably an interesting one here. In a protocol network economy or in Web3 per se, it's a more distributed architecture where the users are actually in ownership and custody of their own data. And so it doesn't mean it is physically stored with them in a box, but it means they have the keys and the encryption, you know, ability to decide who's able to read this and who's got access to it. And you could open an access, a window on your data for a short period of time with a particular individual and a doctor or a physio or a trainer, and revoke that access once that session is finished. Now, today you go to your doctor, they put some information in their computer, supposed to be yours, but it's on their computer. And that triggers a whole bunch of regulatory aspects, HIPAA, GDPR, et cetera, around how they manage that and whether there's possible data leaks. I mean, as soon as you start cloning data everywhere, you have loads of issues and loads of horror stories as well of people who had data leaks and got impersonated by other people, et cetera, et cetera. In the Web3 space, that does not happen because the data does not get cloned across the place. The data stays in one place and you have key control to that data with the encryption and you release that access as and when it's required. So it's like peeping over onto the data and then that's over. So that's a completely different architecture. And I appreciate for the audience might sound complicated, but it's under the hood. And so what's important is what it enables you to do. And so we can build an ecosystem where you're in control, you're in the driver's seat, you get rewarded for the data when you decide to monetize it. You know, someone can come to you and say, we've got this amazing research we're doing on Parkinson or Alzheimer, and we are looking for people to contribute data around this stuff. Do you want to contribute or not? Yes, no. And then you opt in, and then you get rewarded. You get some money, some tokens, some credits back to you that say, "Yeah, thank you for sharing your data." And that happens anonymously. You don't data and identities, not a rabbit hole. I mean, there's loads of rabbit holes in this space that we can go into. But in this, we can anonymize the data and share the part that's relevant for the study.
Right. In a more ecosystem-driven model like this, it seems like one of the challenges might be actually getting participation from multiple, not only just people, individuals, but institutions, whether they're doing research, whether they're doing pharmaceutical, whether they're just a GP, you know, your
That's
family
right.
doctor. How are you thinking about that, and how do you think that you'll be able to kind of bring on board many of these necessary participants of the healthcare ecosystem together to adopt that?
I'm quite realist of the situation in the healthcare ecosystem. You know, big pharma, big corporate, doctor lobbies, etc. I mean, no criticism. They're doing great work. There's some great stuff being done out there. The system's become a little bit of a behemoth.
Yeah.
Because of the old technology that were used, and it's very hard to actually upgrade everybody. You can't just from one day to the other. So it's actually simpler to just build another system in parallel and try to bring people in as much as you can. And then where necessary, you build bridges and interfaces. We starting in the wellness fitness space, that's allowing us to touch a space that's a little bit less regulated, a little bit more freedom in what we want to do. Also, we can prove the concept, right? So we're trying to work with, you know, increasing people's health span, getting them to do the right thing, be more responsible about their health. But the frontier between, or the separation between wellness and healthcare is very thin there, because actually it's just one big connected thing. And you just don't want to get to the sick care stage as long as possible. But it's a very important point. So I think how we bring people in is we try to change behaviors and build that system where people can be accountable, be responsible for their health. And I think in some jurisdiction, you start experimenting with bringing medical data or maybe in some parts DNA data, etc., because that's your baseline. You know, if you look at, let's put regulation aside for a minute, let's put privacy issues or fears about getting cloned aside, DNA is your baseline. It says, hey, JP, your risk of heart disease is this much, and by 65 your mortality rate, you know, is this much. And but you have been doing all this great, you know, training program. You now have your cholesterol in control, and you have all these high blood pressure in control, and you're really a good fat percentages, etc. Now we think you have sort of lifted up that mortality curve, and you've reduced your risk. And that's super valuable. We talked about motivation before. If you can show someone that actually what they're doing is having a that kind of impact, they're hooked up to it. They'll definitely want to carry on, right?
Right.
We past 40, we all realize this body is not going to last forever. We've got kids. We need to run around with them and be able to. Even Peter Attia has got a fantastic phrase in his book Outlive, which says the centenarial decathlon. You know, I want to be able to, you know, do all these things as tick checklist of all the things that I want to be able to do later in my life, lift my kids and play with them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you've seen with I'm sure Brian Johnson, who's kind of really spearheaded a lot of experimental protocols for longevity, and he calls it the longevity Olympics or something
that.
And I think that. That it really points to, one is our culture is valuing longevity more and more, right? Mm-hmm. And we're realizing that the things we do on a daily basis really add up in the aggregate to the quality of our lives and the length of our lives. But we still have a healthcare system that is very specialized, right? You have your cardiologists, you have your OBGYNs, and they all have their specialisms, you know, in what they focus on. And so they're not looking at your holistic health, right?
No.
They have specialisms.
Well, they are and they're not. I mean, if you chat with them, they are conscious that's a very important thing, but they are specialized in one field. You asked me a little bit before, and then you quoted Brian Johnson. I was just at the DeSci Summit. That stands for Decentralized Science, and where I saw Brian Johnson and Balaji talk about longevity and the work they're doing. There's a lot of work in the Web3 space done around decentralized science now. It's an amazing field.
Mm-hmm.
I remember attending last year in Denver. The number of people was confidential. It's like just a few people. And this time, like three times bigger. That field is early, but it's booming like crazy. What decentralized science can do is basically the realization that we need collaboration. We need to be able to access funding. A lot of people, a lot of smaller labs are struggling to get the right funding, and they're struggling to put the funding on places that matters because of the sort of magnet attraction to the big pharma, big corp, topics that are going to be high revenue. They're just some of the rarer disease, some of the more sort of edge research gets ignored and is struggling to find the funding. So this effort with VitaDAO and all these DAOs in the health space are efforts to align funding, align communities, help labs find their community and grow. And collaborate across countries, across cities, across ethnic groups, across genders. Mm-hmm. One of the big problems we have today with biobanks and biobank data is biases. There's lots of data, and we're at the dawn of AI, right?
Yeah.
And so AI needs data. The AI needs data to train on that's actually representative of the people. And what we have today is not the case. There's so many examples I could get into stories. I mean, Rosie O'Donnell, 2012, had a heart attack and was misdiagnosed because actually the data models are trained on white American males and she exhibited symptoms that don't correspond to that. And so she luckily survived, now as an advocate for women's health, but women's heart health. But it's just a shiny example of the model doesn't match. And so we didn't realize you could have those symptoms. We need to train. I mean, I'm wearing loads of wearables. I've got Oura Ring here, Ultra Human. I've got a Whoop. I've got an Apple Watch. I try to measure everything. All these algorithms are trained on data from biobanks.
Yeah.
They're not all saying the same thing because they're all trained on different data of different algorithms. There's a case right now by the FDA who is looking into the actual oximeter sensors. Darker skin get 32% higher heart rate measures.
Right.
And so they're going back and investigating whether that's, you know, misleading people and potentially giving wrong information. If you crowdsource data, the ground up with the right people, the right population, and you actually have a much wider, a much bigger variety of information that actually feeds the models the right representative data.
Right.
That's why we're hell-bent on, you know, what I talked about, aligning funding, aligning communities. We need to align consumers.
Yeah.
When I talked to these people doing these research labs, et cetera, they talked a lot about how they're going to engage consumers. We're going to make an app. Now we make a brain health app. We're going to make a fitness app. We're going to make this app. I said, guys, you're recreating silos. You can have data on that vertical. We need data across all the touch points. I need to know your DNA baseline, physical activity, sleep, nutrition, blood sugar. And then I can reconstruct a real picture of your health. Then that data is not there today. Mm. If we build the ecosystem the way we want to build it, we can actually provide data across all the touch points. And we can provide it with respect to people's privacy, ownership of their data, and we can reward them for it. And that's a massive crowdsourcing mechanism, which is going to change the world in terms of getting the right data.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah, I agree that the rewards are really important and aligning the incentives across everything is critical. I mean, just follow the money, right? Mm. And you'll see where the change happens. If you can get the big money interested.
It's still the best way we found to align people's yes. interests and
it's
motivate
them. It's the universal language,
right? I mean,
it's
right? got we its all, biases yeah. and it's got its, you know, you've got to be careful the yeah. way you do it. But yeah.
But I do think it's really interesting that I think a lot of people maybe assume that for AI to be more effective, you need more data. And that's not necessarily true.
You need better data,
right? So you and I, we could be part of the same database. That does not necessarily mean that by combining our individual data, we will generate a better model. We might actually make a more mediocre model.
Mm.
So
there's a case, yeah. that's got you, sorry, but there's a case recently where they found that you added noise into the database, you're actually were able to isolate the right data better. So it's that signal of a noise. I'm a ham radio operator, so RF and all these things are interesting in my head, then signal to noise ratio makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's very valid in AI data.
Yeah. I mean, you've just started this journey of kind of launching Symbionic, and you're making great progress and having a bunch of great meetings here in Dubai. What are some of the challenges that you've been facing recently in taking off?
You mean about finding funding?
No, I mean in general, right? Achieving your
We're
vision.
We're opening our priesthood ground. So I'm right in the midst, and everything for me is about trying to find the right angel investor, family offices, early stage VCs that actually understand the vision and would work with us to actually help us build it. But the challenge is, I suppose, you know, finding the right stack, being able to architect everything properly, and also bite-sized chunks. Mm-hmm. That can't, it's, well, Paris hasn't been built in a day, is this, you know, famous phrase. It's blocks that you're
put strategy
together
is about strategy. Sequencing, right? Sequencing. It's about what are you going to do first and what's next, and what's the next five moves, right?
And so we're very clear on that. We're starting with physical activity because that's a practical product that can scale quickly, that actually solves a massive problem, which is I want to train remotely, I want to train face-to-face. You know, movement training is something that's typically analog. If we can scale that, I always call yoga teachers, fitness trainers, or I call them the little soldiers on the front line of the health crisis.
Yeah.
If you can augment their business, 100x it, you're actually making that front line stronger. And you're also plugging into users, getting the data.
Yeah.
And so that's the name of the game. That's what we need to be able to deploy the second block.
Yeah.
Well, you know, big empty, you build it and they come. No, it doesn't work. You build the community, you build the users, you get the data through, and then you add up the blocks.
Yeah.
So you can scale up the services.
Yeah. And so once you have that first block of the community together, you're gathering data. The next piece is then to make that data valuable for physicians, clinicians, researchers. So what are the things that they need to do in order to start kind of adopting this approach?
Well, we're opening, we'll work with Ocean Protocol. I'm not sure if you're famous with them. There's nothing formalized there, but I'm having constant conversation with them. And I was at their event with the ASI alignment with the merger with Fetch AI and SingularityNet. It's a fantastic toolbox for what we want to do. And that means we can monetize data with data privacy in mind, with keeping custody and ownership of the data. If you're not familiar with it, it's a compute over data. Basically, the numbers don't move. They stay in one place. We bring the algorithm. We compute the result. We sell the result. Mm-hmm. You get paid.
Yeah.
That's the model.
So the actual underlying data is never revealed to the
Never revealed. Never moves.
Just the results.
It's stored wherever it's stored.
Yeah.
We bring the equation to it.
Yeah. And so as you're, you know, going down this journey, what are the kind of metrics or, you know, how will you know that you're making progress? How will you know that we've made it? What are the things you're looking at?
Ecosystem size, community size, obviously revenue. Mm-hmm. The backend platform is some sort of automated revenue distribution. Mm. So say content creator builds a lesson on, you know, how to, you know, basic patterns of Taekwondo. I love Taekwondo, I used to do. And $100 masterclass, $70 go back to them, $20 go back to Symbionic Labs, $10 stays in the Symbionic Foundation to grow the ecosystem.
Got it.
That's the model. So basically it's a sell the hardware, minimum margin, sell the subscription model, and then recurring revenue. That ecosystem grows because you get that $10 to work and actually partner with another app, mental health app, another startup wants to build on the same stack as you. Mm. They need monetization of the data. They need the social engagement platform. They need all the blocks that you've built. They need them as their backend. They don't need to build a backend anymore. They just join in and work together. And then you add mental health touch points into your data pool.
Got it.
This is the data lake that everybody talks about in the other old world. And it's more centralization. In Web3, it's data decentralized, but accessible with all the touch points.
Yeah. So if you're selling the aggregated results of analysis of the data, and users are kind of opting into that, do they also get a share of that revenue? How
Absolutely.
Does that work, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Users get 10% of everything.
Right. 10% of everything. Great.
Yeah, yeah. So then when they monetize their data, they get paid for it. It's the same content creator model.
Yeah. So they're a key part of that, that exchange. Great.
And that 70-30 rule applies.
Yeah. And I mean, what else do you think is really important for people to know about Symbionic?
Sorry, 10%, wrong number. It's a 70-30 rule. So they get 70% of the revenue of their monetization.
Okay.
The hardware company gets 20. The DAO or the ecosystem keeps 10%.
Okay, so the majority of the value actually goes to users.
So the majority of the value goes back to the user.
Right.
Yes, it's their data.
Yeah. That seems fair. Actually, now that you bring up hardware, I am curious, you know, people say that hardware is difficult for a reason, right? One is you have the whole supply chain issues.
Yeah.
It does give you the ability to have an integrated experience, software and hardware together, taking the Apple approach.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to leverage on the kind of proliferation of all of these devices? I mean, you've got like 10 devices on right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Which are low cost,
yeah,
effective,
you can.
Within degrees of variance. Why develop your own hardware versus just plug into all of these existing hardware devices?
Right. So first, for the motion capture part of things, there isn't hardware that has haptic feedback and the way we want to do it at a low cost. Mm-hmm. Now we're, fingers crossed, targeting our calculations, everything is about $500. That's the hardware target price that we work with. That's still, I probably have to agree that in some areas of the world, it's expensive. For some professional athletes or from serious users who spend thousands of dollars on their shoes, gears, bags, golf clubs, etc., it's actually an okay amount.
Sure.
People like GoPro, I always take GoPro because I love the example, proved us that you can build that kind of hardware company, scale it up, become a massive accessory ecosystem, millions of users. They scaled up to 10 millions of users in, I think, 2 years, something like that. It was just insane. I've got the numbers. And that's always a good mental model for me because suddenly with GoPro, people realized that it was the birth of the content creator economy. They realized they could go out there and then record their moves and jump around in their bike and skateboards and stuff and then share that to the world. Like, wow, actually with motion capture tech, my dream is that the kid next door who's really good at hip hop, who's never thought about being a hip hop teacher, can actually buy this system and get on there and become a hip hop teacher as a side hustle. And monetize his skills. I mean, we want to solve performance athletes, rehab, and other things first. But I think that can go all the way to that.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, all of these use cases I can see. Do you have a sense for what will get adoption first or where the first domino is? Because I can imagine, let's say rehab, for example, you need to bring the physical therapists on board, they need to like the system, want it,
they like the system.
And really,
So we've spoken to quite a few already. These are the audiences that we want to address first.
Yeah.
First of all, onboarding a development client is a fantastic way to work with your target audience to build the best product possible.
Yeah.
They are very demanding. That means you can satisfy them, you've won the others.
Yeah.
So high performance athletes, rehab specialists, people who are really about posture perfect, Pilates, people are very, very, they want you to do the right posture. They understand that, I mean, every time I talk to people who've done high performance sports or are in some sport that is really important to get the posture right, they get it instantly.
Yeah.
They basically say, I want to try. Put it on me. And we have for quite a few people. We've recorded dance, we've recorded yoga, we've recorded martial arts. It's I want to go and record parkour, I want to go and record surfing. And literally, you can't do that with Vision AI, sorry, unless you want to have the drone fly around, and even that's hard. But our system is waterproof, it's embedded, it's on the body, it gives you haptic feedback. It works locally with your phone, doesn't need a network connection. Once you've got the lesson on it, you can train in the woods, anywhere, everywhere. That is the beauty of it.
Got it. Fantastic. Maybe to kind of bring everything together, what's your vision of what the healthcare system looks like in 10, 20 years once Symbionic Labs has established itself and built this ecosystem and brought all of this amazing data together?
Well, I certainly hope that it'll be an ecosystem, a vibrant ecosystem of collaborations. And that's why our vision for the backend platform is open source. That's why it's also a community-driven platform. We want to use the DAO model to actually make everybody a partner in that ecosystem. So if you join in there, if you're a startup building in a mental health app or some other app in that space, joining in means being a partner in that collaboration platform. We certainly don't want to be the only ones. We're not going to be able to build it alone. We just want to be the enablers. And it's like Linux for health.
Yeah. So how do people find you and get involved and plug into this?
Well, our website, symbionic.com. We're everywhere on Twitter, etc., Symbionic, on LinkedIn as well.
Fantastic. JP, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Colin. Really appreciate your time.